here I am with Bruna Toramacci today. It's the 14th of January, and we're having a conversation about what's going on at the moment in Bruna's life. But what we might do is just get a bit of background about Bruna. Mm-hmm. Even though I've interviewed you before, this is something a little bit different. So you might just want to let me know who you are.
Well, I was born in Coola, just outside of Mudgee. And when I was 3 and a half, my parents migrated to Lebington and lived there till I was 18. And then I got married and came up here at Kelly Street, where my husband and I bulldozed. We had our land bulldozed because it was very thick timber. We built a little dwelling. And then we had our 4 children. And from then on, we worked hard on the land together until our 26th, we had our 25th wedding anniversary in the new house, we call it, where I'm living now. And a few years after, he had a massive stroke, and he lived the rest of his life at Scalabrini, where I devoted myself to visiting him every night and looking after him until last year, where he passed away. Now I'm living still in this house, but because I am a bit frail, beginning to get frail with my health, I'll be 70 next month, and I think it's time for me to move along in a different, smaller area, and to be with friends of my own age, because I'm very scared. I'm beginning to get scared to living alone, which I've never been scared before.
Bruna, let's talk about this house.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Now, when was it built, and how did it come about being built?
Well, it came about that we had 4 children, and I only wanted a little room over the other side. It was an L-shaped house, and my husband wanted to keep up with the Jones and the whatever, and he wanted a big house, and he wanted a two-story place so he can put his car garage under a lounge or whatever. But we managed somehow, with the aid of the manager, with the bank, we managed to build what we have. My eldest son was old enough to design it, the house, the way we told him to. And we worked very, very hard on the land. All the children, my husband and all, we all worked very hard to acquire it. And we did a lot of work ourselves, painting, and I did a lot of inquiring with the phone, because we weren't builders, house builders, we were farmers. But I got onto the farm. We were self-managing our house, and we built it. And we went to the factories, direct to the factories, so we got factory prices. We had to get a special license from the council at the time to do this house, so we could go to the factories to get the discount that we got. And then even from nails to the carpet to the curtains, we got everything at factory price. So it was a good saving. We think we must have saved at least the middleman, or what would you call, probably a third of the amount that extra that would have been charged.
Can you describe the style of the house?
Well, the style of the house is, I think, it's 52 square top. That's with the patios, the top veranda, the back veranda. We have 4 bedrooms upstairs and 2 downstairs. My husband turned a room downstairs into a little kitchenette. So I had 2 children come to live here temporary while they were having their house done. In fact, my daughter, when she arrived here, she stayed about 9 months. She had a little baby, and she sold her house and she bought a block of land at Hitchinbrook, and she stayed down there. We call it our little granny flat. But we've seen the little baby growing. It was such a delight. And then my son, he was very sick at one time. He used the granny flat for his own private private thing. And if I sell this place one day, it will be sold as a granny flat downstairs. But my husband was very proud of all the paintings he did it himself. He was very proud of this house. He loved the land. In Italy, he was a fisherman. He only had to walk outside the door, and there was the ocean. The Mediterranean Ocean was there. And he was not far from Mount Etna. And to come from the sea and to come on the land, which we were supposed to only stay, by the way, only 5 years, he promised me. And I'm still here after 51 years coming up.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up at Leppington, and we were farming there. Mainly the Yugoslav, or I call them Yugoslav ladies, or people who knew Mum and Dad, knew us, and they called us, me and my sister, they called us the Baghetti Girls, because we were very skinny and we had to work. My parents made us work.
Were you born here?
Yeah, I was born in Kula, just outside of Mudgee. My father at the time was a station hand there on a sheep farm called Turee. And my mum and dad had marvellous Australian friends that helped them along. And they were friends till they all passed away. They had lovely memories of Turee and Kula. But then it was just before the war started, they migrated down here. Dad started their little vegetable garden, and we made so much money that he was able to build on the black market two little rooms, because they were living in a chicken shed, more or less, painted with white sulphur or something like that. It was just to make it out, it was livable. But when they had the two rooms, it was more, and with the front veranda and a back veranda, which later was converted to a bathroom. One room was converted to the bathroom at the back, and the other side was where my sister and I used to sleep. And we had a little corridor there. And Mum made us, I always remember, make us polishing the boards, and we had to do it with our knees, and we used to slide up and down, and my sister and fight. But it was the happy days. But we did have to work, though. We had to work.
So the floor now is tiled.
The floor now was tiles, because at the my husband wanted tiles, and these are imported tiles. The carpet that I have there comes from Belgium. I found just the other day a piece where it came from Belgium. Hungary, which is not far from there.
Sorry, so that's the original carpet.
Yeah, the original carpet from Hungary. I had the label. These tiles here, I don't know whether they're from Spain or Italy, I can't remember. But my bathroom is wall to wall, right up to the tile, right up to the top, because that was what was in at that time, and we were able to afford to buy it, to make it, to build it. And then all the light fittings are imported from Italy. Those are Spanish, and the light fittings are from Brodie factories around Sydney area. We bought the others, yeah.
So there has a Spanish feel to the house.
Yeah, but that's what we wanted. We wanted to do that. That's why there's a lot of browns around and a lot of creams, because at the time that was the colour that was in. It was all Spanish-style houses with either white brick, or we got a yellow, kind of a yellowy gold brick, but they all had arcs and arches and things. My husband didn't like that idea. He just kept the square one downstairs. But I have an arch inside here. I have an arch. And these doors are louver doors, and these come from Melbourne through, at that time they had the factory in Melbourne. And it's not glass, it's perspex, I think it's called perspex, because I had kids that were a bit rough, and I was worried that if they were glass, that they might cut themselves. But as it turns out, they're very hard to manage to keep clean, but they still lasted all these years, and I think it's about 25 years, or I don't know. It's not quite 25 years that we've been in here. It's been a while.
Can we just talk about some of the rooms?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a favourite room for you, and talk a bit about why?
Well, at the moment, the kitchen where we are now is a favourite because my husband, as I said, it was 20 years and 2 months that he'd been sick to the day he was struck down by a stroke and to the day he died. And when he used to come home, I had to take the TV out of the room, the lounge room, and put it in the kitchen so he could sit down. And if he had a fit or something, he was very comfortable where he was in the kitchen and he could see what was going on. I have a lot of videos taped for him, so when he came home, he used to like to see the old favourites like Robin Hood, Scaramouche, and things like that, and the singers, the three tenors. He used to love singing. He used to love playing the piano accordion, which he got when he was 21, because he was 19 plus when he arrived in Australia, and that was his 21st birthday present his parents gave him when he was up north cutting sugar cane up there. And
what do you do here? There's a lot on the table.
Yeah, as you can see, I've got my craft. I do my craft. It could be beading at the moment, the jewellery making, or I could be making cards. I feel very comfortable in here because everything's too high. I can do it high and I don't have to have a special table. If I go in the lounge, it's very rarely I go there because now it seems I have a big lounge and a big dining room table. Everything's big. It was good when my whole family was here. But now by yourself, you know, I'm stuck in this room and I feel comfortable in this room.
What else do you do in this room?
Cook, everything. I look at TV, I look at my cereals, I do my writing here, just about everything. And I did try to learn my computer this year, tried to learn the computer. I went to almost one semester and then I couldn't continue after that because it was getting a bit difficult for me. I think memory-wise it wasn't, I'm not able to do it.
Can you talk about some of the other rooms, like the family room in here?
The dining room, we had a lot of festive days there. We used to join the kitchen table, which is an extended one, and we used to join it with the dining room table. And when there was a birthday, when there was some particular event, even entertaining the nuns and the priest, entertaining people, I used to have to do all the cooking. My husband used to fool around and boss me there, do this, do cook that. But it was all in good, you know. He used to give me ideas of what to cook and everything. And we had lovely, memorable, happy days in the beginning, and right until he had the stroke. And that was a big turning point, not only for me, but even for my children. But he was very proud of what he had achieved because we had no help from our parents until my parents died and I was able to repaint the house and I bought a little car with it. But other than that, we had no help. His family didn't leave him nothing. In fact, his brother took most of the inheritance. They did it. So he was very proud of what he achieved, but was all with the family.
Do you do anything in that room now?
There's
stuff in there.
There is stuff now because I'm about to leave. I've already decided to where to go. In the very near future, in another 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be putting a sign out that this property is for sale. It's on a 5-acre land, by the way, it's 5 acres. And I'll be hoping, I know I'm on a pension at the moment. I'll be losing the pension because of the amount of money. But, yeah, I will. And but I'll be buying into another place, which is for the 55 and over.
Well, you just scrape in there.
Yeah. Well, I've got friends that are already gone there, and it's lovely where I've decided to go. I put on a $200 deposit at the moment to hold my apartment while I Yeah, it's a lovely three-bedroom apartment I'm getting at top of the range, but they supply a microwave, new microwave, new fridge, new washing machine, dishwasher, what else, is it a dryer, they supply all that, carpet. I only have to open the door, go in and bring my own furniture, whatever, and live there and hopefully enjoy my life too.
What about the other room in the corner here?
The lounge.
Yeah.
The lounge. That had a lot of memorabilia. My grandchildren enjoyed that a lot because they used to put the records on and they used to love it. They used to get the dining room tables from here. And I used to make cubby houses with them. I used to join in and play with them. And my husband used to love watching them, you know, seeing them grow up. Now they are all studying. They're all in the mid-teens to late teens. I have one granddaughter. She's 21. The other, and she's got one more year to study at uni and she'll be a qualified teacher. Her brother will be 20 coming up in March. And he's joined the police force in Goulburn, and he probably late March, April, I don't know, after Easter, he's going to be a policeman. And then on my son's side, the eldest is 18 in June, and he's going to uni, and he probably wants to become, he loves history, so I don't know whether he's going to be a historian or a lawyer or a solicitor. He wants to go ahead and do something with... As he said, I want to do something for the Tramachi name. He wants to put Tramachi up. So he's got very high goals to achieve. And he will, because he's that type of boy.
Who does he remind you of?
I don't know. He's very studious. He's very determined. I wanted to study. I wanted to study. I liked reading and everything when I was younger. I loved reading. So I'm probably a bit for me, but his father was very thorough in his assignments. So was my daughter. Very thorough. They had very high marks.
Where did they do their homework when they were young children?
Well, my son had a little writing desk in his room, and my daughter had to go do it in her room. And then when they had to do drawing and things like that, they had to go in the kitchen. Which that was how it was in those times.
So you also do, I remember your bedspread once. You did.
I did an heirloom, yeah, yes.
You want to talk about, is that still on your bed?
No, okay. I have put it away, but I can take it out.
Well, we might next week when I come.
Yeah.
And we might actually video you taking it out and
looking
at it.
Yeah, okay.
Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I because my husband's been sick and I've always, I can't keep still. I do a lot of craft, and I can't even do the garden anymore, but I do all these things to keep myself occupied. It keeps me my mind working. It keeps me active anyway, because I haven't got friends that I go out. Only my seniors, that are local seniors, they've been a very good help for me. I can never, ever say... they need a lot. They were very hot, very helpful to me. But I have done the heirloom thing. I've done floral arrangements. I've done the tissue boxes. I've done a course in recycling. I know how to recycle paper, recycle bows, and how to cut out flowers and put them on like scrapbooks. I've educated myself in that way. I kept myself active that way, rather than being alone and sitting down doing nothing. I've done coat hangers, knitting coat hangers. I've done quite a few things.
How did the house evolve in terms of? Can you talk about the whole building process? Like, is that clear? Like, what's rooms, like, how long did it take?
Oh, yeah, my husband wanted to make a big house, big rooms. I only wanted one room, but anyway, he wanted to the way he wanted it. And my poor son had to design it. He designed it a few ways. And then because he wanted two-story, it was very complicated. We didn't know how to put the stairs in there. because I didn't want the straight stairs like elevated like that. I wanted a little gap in the middle, which has so many stairs, then a platform, and then going down the other way. So, but anyway, we went to see a couple of houses and see what their designs were, especially the ones that had stairs. So that's how we designed it. And my husband said, the kitchen's got to be big like this, and the dining room's got to be like that, and the lounge has got to be like that. The bedrooms have to be all 14 by 14, that I remember. The hallways is got to be not squeezed. He liked big hallways. I don't know whether he felt suffocated, but he liked everything big. So he forgot that everything big costs money after to paint, to put the tiles in, to put the carpet. All that extra room has to be all accounted for. And he forgot to add that onto his calculations. But he did a good work. We got our own plumber, we got our own builders, we got our own the people who put the bricks on, all subcontract. You know, just what so many hours would have come to so much. We did all the middleman work.
And I mean, what impresses me is like the amazing loyalty you had to your husband for 20 years.
Oh yeah.
What kept you going? Like what is it that keeps you going through that time?
Well, I think it's my upbringing. My parents, they were honest people, and they didn't think malice of anybody. If anybody was better than them, they didn't think, oh, I'm not going to speak to them or whatever. They just went along at their level, and that's what I more or less thought. I have four children to look after, and he wanted to build this house. And I thought that when he built this house, it was enough. But now he built this house, and a few years after we paid it off, we went overseas. We went overseas and we had a holiday. We even went as far as America to see his cousins in America. And a year after, for some reason, I don't know whether it's overworked, he didn't look after his health, and he had the stroke. That was what he worked for came to an ending, more or less, for him. But I still, because he was a good husband.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm just checking. What kept you going yourself?
I've had my ups and downs too. I had very near.
You don't have to talk about it, but I mean, you, because there's qualities that you possess.
I had very near nervous breakdowns, I think two or three times in my life, because that was caused by overwork. But the holidays we took helped me out. On the 25th wedding anniversary, we went up to Queensland, and I had to cook. A couple of days, a week before, I had to cook my own wedding anniversary dinner, which my parents were still alive, and we had the priest and the nuns here, just a few people, and a couple of cousins to celebrate. But then we went up to Queensland. That helped me a bit. But why I worked hard? Because he worked hard, and to see me sitting down and him working out, it wasn't in me. It wasn't in me. And I had suggested him when we finished paying off the house, we should take it easy. But then again, he had his hobbies. He used to go fishing in the winter because that's when we were less work to be done. And I used to stay home and do my sewing and do my house. I think catch up on what I didn't do during the summer. I would do it in the winter. See, because the kids needed their uniform, they needed socks, shoes. I was in charge of doing that. He left it to me. But farm things like that, he would be in charge of, and he would put in so many rows of capsicums. He would put in so many rows of or thousands of plants of tomatoes and that, because that was our main income, and that's how we did our living. But he knew how to work. He worked with. We bought our own tractor, bought our own pump. We had our own dam. We did a lot. Everything where there was saving, which would accumulate to make us more comfortable, to live more comfortable. all our children went to private schools after they left Leppington School, because my children used to go to Leppington. They all went to the private school, and then to the higher school certificate, 11 and 12, my son went to Auburn, and my eldest daughter went to Liverpool, and they were all both put in the higher class at the time, the higher 11 and 12. They did very well. They did all very well.
So when your husband got sick, did you have to run the farm?
There was crops that were in there. We had a help of a cousin that was on my husband's side. He helped a lot, but it was just what we planted. He just looked after it. Unfortunately, there was a couple of crops that were very cheap, and then one of them got hail. We had some tomatoes that got hail damage, and the capsicums were going. You know, they weren't the new crop. It was an old crop. So he was selling the capsicum and the tomatoes, but very cheap. And then he said, you can't look after a farm. I could not look after my farm. My husband had a very big stroke. I was down at the hospital about 11 o'clock to see the doctors do their runs when they came around. And they asked me to help him, help the doctors, or I was to help my husband with his eyesight, with his speech, because he couldn't talk, he couldn't speak. His eyes were all cross-eyed. His face was all, one side was up and one side was down. His lips were twisted. And with massaging, and I would do what the therapist would tell me to do, speak to him and sit on the one side, the other opposite side of his bad eye, so he could train that eye to look that side, not the other side. And I would have to bring him books with kindergarten children books with squares on them and circles, and he would have to read. And that was me helping him with the therapist, to so he could see and regain his memory, regain and learn how to speak, because he couldn't speak. He stayed in hospital there for, I used to go down there every day for 3.5 months, every day. And when he came home, he was left, he had epileptic fits that the stroke left him, and he would be always bleeding and I would panic. I don't know how I did it myself, really. But being younger and being strong, you seem to have that extra strength in you to help you along. To do the right decision, whether to call an ambulance, and where he fell, he broke his arm 2 or 3 places. Until he died, they made an ultrasound there, or what they call an ultrasound, where you go in there with the tunnel, and they found he had 3 or 4 cuts in his arm, because that's where his bone was broken.
Okay, now.
So let's talk.
We're looking at the photo of the tomato bags. We used to call them tomato bags, which originally we had to get the bags and sew them together. And then when they were ready, we would put them down, and we'd put them, before we put the plants in, we'd have the wires put in, and them and the stakes here, we have them there. And then they would be ready for the tomatoes to be planted in. And while they were growing, we had to cover the bags in the morning, open the bags in the morning and close the bags at night, so the cold wouldn't chill them overnight. And that would go on until they grew to a certain point where the bags would touch tomatoes. And then that would have been about October. About mid-October, we would take the bags off, make the big holes in the centre, and then we would put the tomato stakes in and tie them, and had the usual thing, tying them and pruning them, and they would be ready. The fruit would be ready by Christmas, before Christmas. That week before Christmas would be the week that we would make all our money for for all the effort and everything.
Okay, so... So that's the traditional way of growing tomatoes.
Yeah. Now, of course, they have it all in the big plastic houses, and there's nobody like that anymore, no one.
And who did you learn this, who developed this method?
We learned it from the Yugoslav people. They had it already there. And as you know, I've told you before, they always had lovely tomatoes. But then Dad was the first Italian to go into Leppington, And he looked around, and he had two children to look after and a wife. We bought a horse, and then as he went ahead, he made money. But he had good tomatoes too. So much so that during the war, people would go at night and pinch his tomatoes. They go in the middle of the rows with sacks, chaff bags, they used to call them, and steal them. And our carrier told my father, he said, "Guido, your tomatoes are being sold with somebody else's name on them." So he said, "Look out and see if you can catch those people. I can't tell you because I'm delivering them. I'm just losing my job." But that's how good my dad's tomatoes were.
You might as well run it because he'll be talking.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Now, yeah, go.
Now I forgot what I was going to say.
You're talking about how they had footprints.
They had footprints there. And Dad always had lovely Australian friends to help him. The carrier was Australian. I can't remember his name, but he told him about the... And Dad had a look... And he did see the footprints in the middle after he told him. But even up where he first worked up at Cooler, they had friends there that were friends till they died, which was really, I mean, there's not many like that even now. You can't find a friend from the day you arrive to the day you pass away, and they're still good friends. And the first box of tomatoes that Dad would make at Leppington, he would send them up to Cooler. He'd send two boxes, one to the Smiths and one to the Robertsons. And they'd pick them dead green, but by the time they arrived there in those days with the train, they'd be almost ripe. And they really enjoyed it and appreciated it. And that's why, that's another reason they were friends, you know. They came to visit us here one time, and then we went up there, even there, after I got married, and went to see them. And they were overjoyed at our progress and of our life, how it developed out of nothing. It turned out to be quite prosperous.
So what was the hessian for?
The hessian was to cover the tomato plants until a certain height. And when the hessian... was touching the plant was touching the hessian, well, it was time for them to be taken out, which was real about October, always around about October, mid-October, and they'd be ready to put the tomato steaks in there, and then we would start making the big holes, because they have little holes in it by then. Every 4 to 6 plants we'd have a big hole, which we'd have a hose to water them. Every 2 or 3 times a week we watered them. And that's how, and the wires, because you can see there's wires there too, to hold the hessian bags, not just the post, there's wires there. But it was a hard job to open them in the morning and close them. It was a hard job for little children to do. But as you adults could do it, but us children, we had to do it. And we weren't allowed to leave a little hole like that. We had to actually close them right down to the dirt so they would be protected from the frost and the cold or whatever.
So that the cabbages. So let's have a look at the photo. And that grab again, but talk about that for a minute.
Well, these cabbages were planted on top of the rows where the tomatoes were, and we had to water them by hand, just as we did with the tomatoes. And in the background, you can see the greenhouse where my husband used to put all the seedlings and then plant the little plants later on in the ground. And with this particular patch of cabbages here, when we went to sell them, people would come around with their cameras to take photos of them and ask what kind of seeds they were or what kind of cabbages they were. They were so beautiful that we couldn't carry more than 2 each at the time. In fact, the price my husband got was always extra good, that so much money we made, we bought a brand new Holden car, that when my husband went to buy it, the The seller was Pat Cullen from Liverpool. He couldn't believe that out of a patch of cabbages he made all that money. He couldn't believe all the cash my husband brought in. He bought, but, yeah. Well, I have that.
Talk about this photo.
Okay, the photo here started with the beginnings. My husband found a plant that had creamed capsicums in them, and he thought it was something funny, so he inquired about it, and someone told him if he can grow them, that they would be worth a lot of money, which he did. And slowly from the seeds of one plant, he made about 50 plants, and then from those seeds he grew and he collected the seeds and he made more. And when he thought he had enough, he planted them in his greenhouse and they planted a patch. And when he went to sell them, they were always sold. Even before he got in the market, they were always sold because they were good for people's stomach, digestion.